Hi friends, how are you all doing? I'm in LA this week for my cousin Kyle's, our cousin Kyle at this point, graduation from his master's in OT program. Yay! Can you believe it? 2 years flew by. I'm enjoying not only the sun here in California, but the time I have been spending here with family and friends. Anyways, wow, this season flew by, didn't it? Such a bittersweet thing to think about. But I am beyond excited for all of you to listen to today's episode. What year were you guys born? I'm so curious. Well, if you're curious about mine, I was born in 1997. Just the best year. Humbly. The world got its earliest camera phone and functioning Wi-Fi. Ellen DeGeneres came out on TV. The first book of the Harry Potter series was published. And for K-pop stans, it was also the year that the supreme 97 line of Jungkook, Mingyu, and Jeonwoo were born. And it was the year this song with this line was released. Life in Plastic, it's fantastic. Who here knows it? Yes, this iconic line is from the 1997 released hit song, Barbie Girl, by Europop band Aqua. This song overtly alluded to the also iconic Barbie doll that debuted in 1959. The same year as the song, 1997, a paper by Fairmont State College professor Albert M. Magro was also released, entitled, Why Barbie is Perceived as Beautiful. The Barbie doll has long been the paradigm of societal attractiveness through her physical features. The paper was formed through a survey report, and we were given the reasons why quote-unquote Barbie is beautiful. A thinner body frame, longer limbs, elongated neck, square shoulders, and larger eyes. Research studies throughout the decades have shown Barbie's mixed influences on body image and the rise of cosmetic altering procedures to achieve these physical ideals that have been pushed to societal norms, such as liposuction, breast augmentation, injectables, and radiodectomy, or a facelift. This has placed the medical domains of plastic and cosmetic surgery in a narrowed and misconstrued light of mere vanity in the pursuit of physical perfection. However, there is more to the field of plastic surgery than cosmesis, with power and necessity in its own right by bestowing self-confidence and the resulting quality of life. We have had previous episodes on the podcast with facial plastic and cosmetic surgeons who have opened their eyes to the power of the cosmetic aspect of the field of plastics. I will never forget the story of the patient who was previously in an abusive relationship and was left with a disfigured nose. Daily reminded of the horrors in the mirror, a cosmetic procedure was her only way out of this trauma. But beyond this, the field of plastic and reconstructive surgery truly daily changes, improves, and saves lives through surgeries such as cleft lip and palate repair, breast reconstruction secondary to breast cancer mastectomy, reduction mammoplasty to relieve intertrigo, facial reconstruction after physical trauma, skin grafting to treat burn wounds, and so much more. Today, we are joined by 6-year plastic surgery resident physician and my dear friend and co-food adventurer, Dr. Alex Sun, to speak about the often misunderstood beauty of the field. He received his Bachelor in Biomedical Engineering degree from Duke University and MD from Yale University School of Medicine, where he was an NIH-funded Plastic Surgery Research Fellow. Dr. Sun is currently completing his plastic surgery residency at the Johns Hopkins Hospital Department of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery. There is so much to learn and so much to find out in today's episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yay. We finally made it.
Nice.
Oh my gosh. I've been so excited. I know we talked about this somehow before as well, and it's finally here. How was your day?
Yeah, I feel like it's been a year or something since we talked about it. It's been good. It's just really hot in Baltimore. I'm sure it's hot up there too.
It's like 90 something degrees here today.
Yeah.
And it's so humid too. I was in the subway earlier and just melting.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Anyways, again, thank you so much for being here with me as I soon close the season of the third season of my podcast. And it's such an honor to have you. If you could just first introduce yourself to everybody, thank you so much.
Yeah. So my name is Alex. I am currently a resident at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore in plastic and reconstructive surgery. I'm currently in my 6th year. So normally plastic surgery is 6 years, but we have a research year. So I saw 1 year after this year.
Wow. It's such a short program. Anywho, I started this edgy live stream series turned podcast series several years ago just to really just dissect the lives of healthcare workers, right? Just to see their daily lives and also see their ventures within and also outside of medicine. And Alex and I met for the very first time, time flies, I think a year ago during our photo shoot with Clove, right?
Yeah.
In Philly. And it's just crazy how time flies. And I guess that's true for your life in general, right? I mean, you've been in training for 6 years now, and prior to that training, you've been in school for, I guess, most of your life, right? Can you relay that journey to us within medicine?
I feel like, time flies, but it also feels like forever ago that I've started. So I went to, you go to 4 years of college. I took a year off after college, actually, to put together my med school application. Wasn't entirely ready at the time and didn't have enough letters. And I also wanted to do some research. So I took a year off, and then I started medical school right after research year. And then for med school, I also took another research year during med school, just because for plastic surgery, I'd heard that, you kind of need a lot of research, or you need a lot of commitment to the specialty. And so I found a great mentor in med school, and I spent a year with him doing research. And so that was 5 years of med school. It also helped that. So our class was 100 people, and I think like 80 some took that extra research year. So it basically felt normal to take a research year, and we were all around. It was very social. So it was great. And then I started residency, and so I've been in residency since then.
I feel like I feel tired thinking of going through that journey. Like you said, you're a plastic surgery resident, which we'll talk more about the field of plastic surgery. I think I wanted to talk about medicine as a whole. You know, we've had over 50 guests now in our podcast, counting this third season. It's almost 100, actually, 100 guests. And one thing I like asking is the inspirations behind what someone does, right? And I want to know, what's your inspiration in pursuing medicine? Is it like family, friends, or personal experience?
Actually, I think I was thinking about this, and I think my first inspiration was actually middle school. We had to read Gifted Hands by Ben Carson. And obviously, he went on to do a lot of other things after writing his books. But so he was a neurosurgeon at Hopkins, and I just really loved the way he was describing surgeries, and I really liked, what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And so for the longest time, I thought I wanted to go into neurosurgery. Mm-hmm. And then in college, I was pre-med, but I wasn't really that set on medicine. I was kind of just, checking out engineering, checking out other fields. In college, I decided to start shadowing physicians, and I randomly decided to shadow a plastic surgeon. And actually, I was also randomly matched up with a pediatric plastic surgeon. So I really enjoyed seeing the types of procedures that the surgeon was doing, and also the types of conditions that you could help fix. And so I really enjoyed that. And so going into med school, I knew I was interested in plastic surgery. And obviously, I thought about other specialties, but I was pretty much set on plastic surgery.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, we've been planning to do this live for, I think, over a year now, right? But I think the push that really gave me to be like, when I texted you the other night, I said, Alex, can you go on the live stream? Last week was Barbie weekend, right?
Mm-hmm,
and if no one knew, you're living under a rock, because everyone in New York City was wearing pink. I watched Joyride with my friends last weekend.
Uh-huh.
And everyone on the escalator was wearing pink. It's like, is it breast cancer awareness month that's going on? No, it was Barbie weekend. And thinking of Barbie, I haven't watched it yet, but I think growing up, thinking about the Barbie doll and the Ken doll, right? I think what's tied to that is the word ideals, right? Like physical ideals. And I mean, even the song in itself by Aqua, like Barbie Girl, right? It says life in plastic. It's fantastic, right? We all know the song. And in healthcare, plastic is the connotation of plastics, right? Which is the field of plastic surgery. So that's when I was like, I think it's just right that we talk about plastic surgery in commemoration of Barbie weekend. And outside of that, it's such a very special and very insightful field, right? Well, I mean, you were already saying how you kind of knew why you wanted to do plastic surgery, as opposed to why you wanted to go into it. I guess what makes you stay in plastic surgery? What was the reason you think that this field is really what you want?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the thing I like the most is that it's such a diverse field, and literally every day is a different procedure. I don't normally talk about the procedures we do on Instagram just for like privacy reasons, but I feel like in med school, it's things that you literally are not exposed to. And like, you don't realize that we're doing these different, crazy reconstructive procedures, but you're operating on, different parts of the body every day. You're operating on different age groups, different diseases. And so I think it's just everything feels, fresh and new all the time. And so it's also a field where you just feel like you're constantly learning, and there's always things to improve on. So I think it's that really drives me.
I often wish I had perfect vision. There is so much intricacy in life and beauty in the world around me that I often miss because my view can get so blurry. Though I had glasses for years, I opted never to wear them because of the embarrassing indentations and marks they left behind in my face. Covery seeks to target this common struggle within the eyewear market. Covery is a 100% AAPI woman-owned inclusive eyewear brand designed for comfort, offering a wide range of sunwear and specs with prescription lens options. With their signature elevated fit that features longer nose pads, a reduced frame curvature, and a narrow nose bridge to elevate the frame, Covery is designed to better complement diverse facial features such as low nose bridges and high cheekbones for an effortless fit. Beyond this, the premium handcrafted frames are made from plant-based acetate and lenses with 100% UV protection. Find your perfect fit with their offers of a home and virtual try-on. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get $20 off any frame you like on shopcovery.com. See the world's beauty more comfortably with Covery. This offer is valid in one frame per order, cannot be combined with any other offers, and is limited to one use per customer. There are luxuries in life that see beyond material things. Practices like self-care and skincare can be an oasis in the whirlwinds and busyness of life. But what if there exists a harmony between material and immaterial luxuries? House of M Beauty is a saffron-infused luxury skincare line that harnesses the antioxidant, vitamin C-rich, anti-inflammatory, and antibacterial power of the highest quality medicinal-grade saffron. They are a clean treatment skincare line suitable for sensitive and postpartum skin. Their unique and consciously crafted formulations maximize the potency of medicinal saffron to calm and soothe sensitive skin while brightening and targeting skin concerns. From their skin polish, to the Miracle Serum, to the Glow Jelly Mask, and the Silk Night Concentrate, experience the luxurious transformation saffron can bring to your skin with the code FRANZ20, that's FRANZ20, for 20% off your first order on houseofmbeauty.com. Also available at Nordstrom nationwide. As a nurse, I am on my feet, alert for 12 hours or more each day. There is no space for drowsiness or lethargy in my job because my patient's well-being is at stake. Sometimes, you just need the extra energy boost from coffee. Robusta coffee offers 2 times more caffeine and antioxidants with 60% less sugar. But did you know that thanks to its climate and fertile volcanic soil, Vietnam is the world's second largest coffee producer and the number one grower of Robusta? Nguyen Coffee Supply is America's first specialty, woman-owned Vietnamese coffee company set to change the future of coffee through sustainability, diversity, and inclusion. The only roast coffee beans are hand-picked at peak ripeness from direct trade Vietnamese farms to produce sweet and flavorful coffee without any additives, flavorings, or oils. Get your own velvety coffee experience for 15% off your order with the code FRANZ15, that's FRANZ15, at NguyenCoffeeSupply.com.
Talking about plastic surgery, again, it can become very cloudy, right? When it comes to this field, I think there's a clash between inherently of what the field is and what it stands for, and also the societal view that people have had for decades about the field. What is the premise of plastic surgery for you?
Great question. So plastic, what do you think plastic means? I'm asking you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Am I the guest now?
The guest now.
Wow. The tables have turned on me.
Yeah.
What does plastic mean?
I didn't actually realize this, but I thought, you know, you think plastic means like synthetic, like polymers that you're putting into people, right? But plastic, it comes from Greek. It means to mold or to reshape. Mm-hmm. And so essentially the field deals with reshaping the body, doing different kinds of procedures to reconstruct or recreate what was there or what, you know, should have developed. And so for plastic surgery, I think the biggest thing for us is really understanding every part of the body, understanding the blood supply, the, you know, innervation, the development of different parts of the body, and using what we have to reconstruct what's missing. And so, you know, when I work with medical students, I tell them, you know, the thing we care about the most is blood supply always. It's always blood supply. It's keeping tissue alive. You know, whether you're just moving tissue around locally in the area where it's from, or literally lifting up a giant piece of tissue, moving it somewhere else and reconnecting the blood vessels. It's always about keeping it alive and figuring out what the anatomy is of something. So I didn't realize that's what plastic meant until I was in med school or started plastic surgery. So it is, I would say it is tissue handling. It's, you know, tissue reconstruction, tissue handling, all tissue types.
Yeah, see, it's very different when, let's say, you know those TikTok videos where they go up to someone in the street and ask them a question. I feel like what you just asked me, definitely that would not be the answer, right? Yeah. Because, like, it's really not what people know plastics or plastic surgery or reconstructive surgery to be about, right? It's so beautiful. And I guess I also want to ask, when it comes to the surgeries itself, I know you said that you don't really share online what surgeries you do, but can you take us, let's say, on a day-to-day basis? It's like the bread and butter of your work. Would you say that there is the most common surgeries that you would do?
For sure. So I think it's also different whether you're in like a hospital-based practice or whether you're in private practice and doing like elective aesthetic surgery. Generally, you know, my exposure is working in a hospital. And so we have a few different like hospital services, and each one kind of has a different focus based on the attendings that are on that service. Bread and butter, I would say, you know, things like body surgery. So whether it's paniculectomies, tummy tucks, breast surgery, breast reconstruction after breast cancer. We work a lot with orthopedic surgeons and vascular surgeons for limb salvage. And so after like trauma or a large sarcoma resection or something, you know, instead of pursuing amputation, you know, giving patients options for reconstructing soft tissue or providing bony coverage or hardware coverage. We have transgender surgery as a part of what we do, whether that's top surgery, bottom surgery, or facial surgery. There's craniofacial surgery, which is both craniofacial trauma and also congenital craniofacial conditions. So whether those are skull deformities or soft tissue deformities in children. And hand surgery is shared by plastic surgery and orthopedic surgery. So we have elective hand surgeries, whether that's like carpal tunnel releases or taking out cysts, or also more complex hand reconstruction and upper extremity reconstruction surgery. And I guess also, since we are like kind of like a big center, we do a lot of peripheral nerve stuff. So for patients with spinal cord injury or different kinds of brachial plexus injury or whatever, either doing nerve transfers or tendon transfers to help rehabilitate movement and function, you know, in your legs and your arms.
Yeah, see, these are surgeries that probably people wouldn't think that plastic surgery does, right? Again, I feel like we have a very, I guess in a societal view, a very clouded image of what plastic surgery is, right? And I think it kind of gives me the feeling of, I guess sometimes when patients come in and they're like, I have this problem, which kind of doctor do I see, right? What type of doctor do I see? And I guess with some of the surgeries that you listed, right, people would not think that it's a plastic surgeon who would do those, right? Would you say that you have a favorite surgery to do?
That's a good question. I really enjoy local flaps. It's like whether that's Mohs reconstruction or even like moving muscles around, because I think it's interesting because like if you have a patient and you have a defect, like if they had either a skin defect or they had some part of their body taken out, thinking about all your options for reconstruction, I think it's a really cool exercise. Thinking about all the muscles that are nearby that you could lift up and rotate to fill in that area. Or, you know, if those aren't options, what tissues around the body can you sacrifice and move to fill in that defect? So I think those are really cool just like to think about, because you have to think about, you know, the patients, what they do for work, if they need like certain functions for work, or if they're older and you can't sacrifice certain muscles because they need it for mobility, or what kinds of surgeries they've had, you know, have they had surgeries that have gone through the blood supplies of different muscles or different tissues that you need? And so I think those are all, it just really is fun to think about. And so I do enjoy that the most.
Yeah, I feel like with surgery, I think really what's the crux of it all is very anatomical knowledge, right? Like just expertise in anatomy. And in medicine, we have like time is brain and stuff like that, right? And really in that moment, in your sacred space in the OR, right, during that surgery and during that procedure, it's like, yes, all hands on deck. And it's like your brain is just working like second by second, right? What would be your advice, let's say, to somebody or a medical student or a resident in training too, right, who wants to be within the surgical sphere? What would be your biggest advice to them as a surgeon?
Yeah, I think depending on what level you are, it is a good idea to shadow and always just get exposure to surgery. And first of all, like what they do and what the lifestyle is like and whether that's the kind of environment for you. Because unfortunately, you know, most medical students don't actually rotate until their third year of med school, right before they have to apply for a specialty. And at that point, you know, you're making these decisions about the rest of your life really late. And a lot of students, you know, I'll meet them and then they'll say like, you know, they're worried about, first of all, like whether this is the right choice. And second of all, if they can get a position applying, like thinking about this so late in their career. And so I think it's always good to just like shadow early, you know, whether you're in college and you can shadow at your local hospital or a hospital near your house, or if you're a medical student, you can always shadow, you know, early on also. You might not get the scrub in and it might be kind of boring standing there, but at least you can just get a feel for what being in the OR is like. Mm-hmm. And the more, as you progress, the more role that you can have during those surgeries.
Any suturing tips? The last time I tried to suture, I thought I was going to get like carpal tunnel.
Or... Oh, really? Suturing tips. I don't have anything with me. But I guess you want to hold the pickups like a pencil, you know? You don't hold them above, you hold below. We generally are very careful with skin, so you don't want to crush skin. You want to, because again, we care about blood supply. You don't want to crush the blood supply. You want to be careful what part of the skin you're holding on to, how much tension you're applying to it, or even if you're suturing anything, you know, careful about how you're holding it. And then for the needle drivers, I think I like to keep my thumb in it and use the rest of my hand to palm it. I don't palm the entire needle driver, I think. You'll figure it out.
Our next episode will be a masterclass with Alex.
Let's do it.
Yeah. After these suturing tips. You know, you mentioned about lifestyle, right? When it comes to surgery. And I think this is a butt of many memes and jokes online, right? When it comes to lifestyle, when it comes to surgeons, right? How would you say your life or your lifestyle, your social life is affected by being in the field of surgery? I mean, I think a few weeks ago, I saw this TikTok where a neurosurgeon dad left their kid, "Oh, I'm going to go to work." And then when he comes back home, the kid is already like 12 years old. So we hear these things of, oh, you know, if you're a surgeon, you won't have any life, you have any social life. How true is that for you?
I think residency is its own special place. And so I can't really speak to what the lifestyle is like once you're out of residency. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is much better and much more normal. Yeah. Also, depending on, you know, what you want your own career to look like. Because some people, you know, don't take any call, and some people still continue call. So I don't actually know what that lifestyle will be like. But in residency, I would say our first 3 years are extremely busy. It's very high stress because you're just held to expectations by every single person in the hospital. And, you know, you're doing like three people's jobs and you can't fail anyone. And then as you get on, you do get more and more time, I think, as a senior, you know, because at this point, you know, we're doing more elective time, more time to see different kinds of specialties that we're interested in. And you have less in-house call responsibilities. You still take a lot of home call. So it changes throughout residency. But I think, you know, it is easy to still do the things you like because you technically have like this 80-hour work week. And so you do have time after work. You're not always working 80 hours. And so I felt like even as an intern, I, you know, still had time for myself after work every day. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on how much sleep you want. But, you know, I felt like I still had a few hours every night.
Yeah. And outside of lifestyle, I think there's a running idea in the forums and online that the OR sphere can be quite toxic, they say, with different types of personalities. I mean, if you think about it, it's very crucial moments, right? It's very pressurized moments. How do you think you manage those pressures? I mean, do you believe in the idea that there is toxicity in the OR? Or how do you manage it, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think definitely there's that stigma, especially as a med student. You're thinking about, you know, oh, you're going to the OR, it's going to be toxic, and you're just going to be like yelled at by everyone. I think the OR actually can be really great, especially if you're working with the same team every day and you're seeing all the same faces. Mm-hmm. It could be a really fun place to be. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that it's toxic. Generally, everything's very pleasant. You know, there's music playing, people are, you know, there's teaching going on, there's, you know, it's great. But I do think that in the middle of a surgery, you know, there are crucial moments where things have to be precise. And if something happens, you know, you want to like be focused. And so there are moments when things are tense, but I wouldn't call it toxic. It obviously depends on who the surgeon is and who everyone else is, like who the, you know, nurses, the anesthesia team is as well.
Got it. And a surprise question for you, what song do you like playing in the OR?
I play a pop playlist, and I always do the same one because it's like 7 hours long.
Can you think of one song that's inside that playlist?
Okay, it starts with Ed Sheeran. I honestly can't think of which song it was. There's Ed Sheeran on there. There's some 80s on there also. But yeah, it's always the same playlist for me.
Exciting. I mean, I think the other day I walked into our surgeon playing K-pop, and I was like,
oh yeah, there is. I think there's like two BTS songs on my playlist. Yeah.
You know, we've been talking a lot about plastic surgery in general, right? And also surgery as a whole and life as a surgical resident. I wanted to veer deeper and deeper into, someone said Blackpink, deeper and deeper, New Jeans. And
Ditto's on there too.
Ditto. deeper into plastic surgery, right? The American Society of Plastic Surgeons, on their website, divides most of their surgeries into cosmetic and reconstructive. What do you think of that division? Are there really like surgeries that you would place under the cosmetic label and then under reconstructive labels, and maybe examples of both? I know you've given examples.
Yeah, I think there is a distinction because of insurance. And so any case could be, there's elements of both. I feel like the distinction isn't that set because obviously everything we do, we have some kind of aesthetic sense into what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You want things to look good in the end. And aesthetic surgery itself is reconstruction in a way, because you're trying to reproduce how things, you know, may have looked before or should look. Mm-hmm. And so for the distinction, it really is based on insurance. And it also depends on what kind of setting you're operating in. But if it is a place that charges based on time, there's literally a point where the surgeon will say, okay, you know, cosmetic time starts now, and then the timer will start, and then that way you can charge only the cosmetic portion to the patient, and you know, then insurance will pay for reconstructive portion. So for example, for blepharoplasty or eyelid surgery, the upper eyelids can be covered by insurance, you know, depending if they're affecting your vision and covering your, if you're getting visual field tests and it's demonstrating some kind of impact on your vision. But then the lower eyelids are not covered by insurance just because it really isn't a functional impact. And so if someone is getting both, then you would want to distinguish, you know, when one starts and when one ends.
Got it. So interesting. It's interesting how the upper eyelid versus the lower eyelid would be covered or not by insurance, right?
It's also like kind of silly sometimes, like for breast reductions, for example, you know, there's some insurance companies will have kind of like a arbitrary weight that they say like this many grams of tissue need to be removed for it to be considered like a necessary insured procedure. And then if it's less than that, then, you know, they may need to get pay for it themselves or go through a private practice or something.
Wow, that's so exact.
Yeah.
So and so interesting, right? As a surgeon, I wanted to get your insights on, do you tackle or do you enter those rooms differently, I guess inherently wise, whether it's cosmetic or reconstructive? I know that mostly it's based on insurance, but I guess there's really no, within like the essence of the surgeries itself, right? Like there's really no set division line, right? Like you said, cosmetic can become reconstructed, right? They are reconstructive in nature. Is there a difference in how you approach these two surgeries?
I wouldn't say that there is. You mean in terms of like planning or in the procedure itself? I don't think that there really is. It's just that sometimes if it is a you know, very complex reconstructive case, like for trauma or for cancer, then you have different priorities going on. And so then you kind of have to weigh like what's important and what's not important. And sometimes, you know, having the best closure isn't important because you don't have enough tissue, or you can't bring enough skin or enough whatever to fill in the defect, or you might have to sacrifice some kind of function to give them a reconstruction. So the priorities are different, but that's about it. It really depends on, you know, what the specific case is and what's going on with the patient.
Got it. Veering even deeper, I wanted to really tackle cosmetic surgeries, right? You kind of mentioned something earlier before how, well, the insurance companies would be the qualifier of what is deemed as probably a surgery that's health benefit versus one that is not, right? Or one that is more life saving or whatnot versus one that is more of the patient's like, I want to do this more for like very cosmetic reasons, right? When it comes to how something physically looks. And I guess this is where it roots from, where society has placed a lot of stigma and taboo when it comes to plastic surgery, right? And I guess even a distant cousin of plastic surgery, which is cosmetics and aesthetics, right? Do you think there's a demarcation line between plastic surgery versus someone who wants to get a surgery more for attaining a certain physical ideal?
You mean from like the surgery perspective or the surgeon perspective? So I guess the only demarcation I can think of is that, you know, there are cosmetic surgeons who aren't plastic surgeons. So there's the American Board of Plastic Surgery, which is the board for plastic and reconstructive surgeons. And so that's part of the American Board of Medical Specialties. So it's recognized by the ABMS. But then there's also another board of cosmetic surgery that's actually not recognized by the American Board of Medical Specialties. And so I don't know what the requirements are to be a cosmetic surgeon, but I think, I don't know, I think it might be even like a one-year fellowship. And I don't know if you need to be a surgeon to take that fellowship. And so obviously many are surgeons already, and so they can still operate safely. But I think there is just a little bit less maybe I honestly don't know what the requirements are. So yeah. I can't speak to that, but there is a distinction between, you know, a cosmetic surgeon versus a plastic surgeon. And so I only know about the plastic surgery side.
Yeah. And I guess when talking about the essence of the surgery itself, right, outside of the surgeon who's doing it, you used the word stigma before, right? And I think it's true, right? There's a lot of stigma when it comes to the field, which is why, I guess, one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this live, because again, it's Barbie weekend. And I guess if you scroll through the forums online, sometimes the word Barbie is, it's happened that, right? Sometimes it's a compliment, sometimes it's not a compliment, right? So I feel like it's a very divided world.
Being in scrubs the whole shift and for days at work can sometimes strip you of your sense of fashion and self-expression. But instilling a bit of design and color does not hurt to let your personality shine through your uniform. V Coterie is a leading provider of healthcare jewelry and accessories for playful everyday wear, from pins to badge-real charms and medical specialty-specific necklaces. With a creative process paralleling the founder's background in dentistry, Vicoterie was founded to spark the genius within you, redefining the traditional boundaries for jewelry and accessories. They believe fashion can celebrate curiosity and the pursuit of knowledge while allowing you to express your truest self. From the curious student to a confident clinician or even a kidney transplant survivor, Vicoterie is here to celebrate you no matter where the journey takes you. Get 15% off your first order with the code VFriendsOfFrons on vcoterie.com. Find your daily dose of style and make your passion your fashion. As someone with acne-prone skin, I always fear using new moisturizers that may be too heavy on my skin and clog my pores. This is why I love my Aloe Quench by Skin by Anthos, a facial moisturizer made for all skin types, especially for sensitive skin like mine. Made with an oil-free formula using aloe, glycerin, and green tea, it is suitable for acne-prone, oily, or combination skin. Its soothing and paraben-free formula makes it even great for sunburns and patients taking Accutane. Skin by Anthos is the byproduct of the minds and expertise of board-certified dermatology professionals and proud AAPI mothers who saw the need for access to pharmaceutical strength and professional-grade skincare for those with sensitive skin and or skin of color from the safety and convenience of home. Experience a regimen tailored to your skin type that is strong enough to deliver medical-grade results for 20% off with the code FRONZPODCAST when you order on skinbyanthos.com. The sense of taste is so intriguing. A cascade of good memories can wash over you as you experience a flavor you have met before. Founded by Hannah Bae, Helmi, a loving nickname for grandma in Korean, is a brand of light sparkling beverages that evokes feelings of nostalgia for Koreans and Asians in general, but also curiosity if you are not familiar with certain ingredients and the story behind the flavors. Inspired by traditional Korean flavors through family recipes and made with real fruits and spices, Helmi's debut flavor, Cinnamon Ginger Jujube Persimmon, is a sparkling take on Korea's beloved sujungwa, a sweetened spice punch that has been brewed for generations to aid digestion and is shared during Korea's most festive moments. It's their version of a healthier, lighter ginger ale. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get 15% off your first order on drinkhelmi.com. Partake in honoring roots, strengthening ancestral connections, and celebrating hyphenated identities with unique, refreshing, and better-for-you ingredients.
I guess when it comes to plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery, I was talking to a facial plastic surgeon before too, and she was saying how sometimes, I guess, which is what you mentioned as well, sometimes you don't see how the cosmesis side of it is actually very reconstructive, not just physically, but a very psychosocial effect on the patient, right? She's like, you don't know if the scar revision surgery was something. She said that she had a patient before who was going through physical abuse, right, from their partner. And that scar reminds them every day of those traumatic times. And in that sense, plastic surgery was her way out to peace, right, from trying to tackle all of that. And also she said, you don't know if someone's decision to have breast augmentation or breast reduction is rooting from bullying that they've gone through back in their life, right? What would you say about those moments where, I guess, as a plastic surgeon, right? I mean, you're not just dealing with the body and the physical, but I guess you really have a very big role and also in someone's, I guess, mental health and psychosocial being, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's I think that's something I saw during medical school because my mentor was trained in craniofacial surgery, you know, was operating mostly on children, you know, doing these crazy skull reshaping surgeries. But then he also did cosmetic surgery also, like aesthetic surgery. And a lot of people do that. And the line between what is reconstructive versus what is aesthetic is not necessarily that distinct. And, you know, doing something elective and aesthetic for a patient really can change the way they see themselves and really affect their lives. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think even things that everyone has their own goals for themselves and their own ideals of, you know, what they value as important. And we can't necessarily speak to what someone else should look like or what they should feel about themselves. So I totally agree with that. I think, you know, for things like transgender surgery also, you know, it's at least in Maryland, I believe, I don't know which parts, but most parts are covered by insurance. And so it's, you know, the same idea. It's if you feel a certain way about how you should look or, you know, whatever, then you're still doing that as a service for the patient.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it really boils down to quality of life, right? I mean, you were talking about hand surgeries, and I guess there's some plastic surgeons who also do like orthodontic surgeries, right? And I guess you also like skin cancer, right? Like Mohs surgery. I think also like really targeting that quality of life is such an important thing, right? I mean, some things that we take for granted, like the ability to move our hands, right? To, I guess, turn the doorknob. Some people can't do that, right? And so this plastic surgery is the way that they can really achieve the restoration of those, I guess, basic abilities that for the general population we take for granted, right? Well, I guess I want to ask, what do you think is your most favorite part about being a surgeon? And I guess a plastic surgeon?
It's a great question. I think my favorite part is, so we like cooperate a lot with different surgical specialties. We actually don't, I feel like we work with internal medicine like the least. I think we work with every other surgical specialty the most. And so my favorite part is really working with other specialties, cooperating a lot, being able to tackle something together with another surgical service. I think that's really enjoyable, coordinating, you know, your procedures. I think it's that collaboration I really enjoy. And also, you know, you are able to be a part of someone's bigger picture, you know, procedure. So I really enjoy that.
That's beautiful. And, you know, as a physician, as a surgeon, definitely people's lives, and not just lives, but their trust is in your hands, right? Whether it's cosmetic or for reconstructive, whether it's the ability to maybe fulfill the physical idea that someone wants, there's also reconstruction, which are very life-saving, right? Or really ones that, I guess, restore someone's quality of life. I guess it's so much responsibility, right? And I can't imagine the amount of not just physical, but I guess also emotional toll that it can take on a surgeon. How do you decompress from work, from all of
this? I was thinking of that responsibility thing, just to back up. I was thinking about that recently, where as a resident, you feel like you have so much responsibility and you're, you know, being like harassed in all directions by everyone. But then I feel like in recent years, I've come to realize, you know, it's actually going to be completely different when you're the attending. You're actually responsible for literally everything. And so I'm curious what that's going to feel like in a few years. But yeah, how I decompress, I really enjoy spending time with people. I feel like I have, again, I'm able to do stuff outside of work. I think I still have hobbies, you know? I feel like most people lose hobbies when they start residency. Maybe I did when I started residency, but I think I still am able to, you know, set aside time for other things.
Yeah. Well, I remember you telling me he's a plant zaddy. He's a plant zaddy with his plants that I remember you told me you killed during medical school.
Yeah.
But I have more time in residency. And I guess what I also see is like food, right? Love having food, which we will have soon here in New York City. This was a talk that I've always wanted to have because I think it's very important to, I think, break down walls when it comes to taboo and, I guess, stigmatized topics, because there's people who may want to go through it but are afraid of, I guess, the reception of the people and the world around them, right? I guess one of my last few questions, what would be your message as a plastic surgeon to someone out there who may want and need the help of a plastic surgeon but are afraid of, I guess, the societal view about the field?
I think, you know, ultimately, it's your life. You know, if this is something that you feel like it's something that you know, have thought about, and it's something I don't know what the reason is, if other people are telling you not to, you know, you want to find a surgeon who kind of identifies with your same goals. You want someone who, you know, understands what you're talking about and also agrees and is able to do the same thing. Because one thing is like a surgeon might have a different ideals for, you know, if this is like cosmetic surgery, a surgeon might have different ideals of what something should look like than what you want. And so you also want someone to be on the same page as you. And so eventually, you know, finding the right surgeon is important, but I think, you know, finding maybe your family or friends are actually doing a good job warning you, but you know, making sure that this is the right decision for you. And ultimately, it is your own decision.
I love that. Ugh, Alex, I love this conversation so much. Can't believe it took us a year, but thank you to Barbie.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you to the Barbie group for making this happen. Well, Alex, thank you again so much. I learned so much. And I don't think I'll ever forget that plastics, you know, what you're saying about to mold, right? I mean, you're not just molding someone like physically, and I guess they are ideals for themselves. But really, plastic surgery is molding the life that someone deserves and wants and deserves for themselves, right? I guess even deeper than skin level, right? Being able to change, I guess, someone's confidence and someone's perceptions of themselves and I guess their whole quality of life. So it's such an honor having this conversation.
Yeah, that was thank you so much. Very eloquent. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for joining, and thank you, Alex. I'll see you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.